Scott Spears back with you here for hour number two of the big program today, Thursday, February 21st, 2019, 15 minutes past the hour. And we certainly want to thank Sally McDonald for being on in hour number one, remembering her mother, the longest serving press reporter in the history of the White House, Sarah McClendon. So it was a pleasure to have Sally McDonald on. Do want to remind everybody that coming up next Friday, we're going to be going to Tony Paco's, the most famous hot dog restaurant in the world, on Friday, March the 1st. We'll be there broadcasting live from 11:10 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon. Why that date? March the 1st is the 25th anniversary of Mary Ellen Withrow being sworn in as the 40th Treasurer of the United States. Mary Ellen and a whole bunch of us here from the station are going to go up to Toledo, Ohio to Tony Paco's. And during the day, there is a tradition at Tony Paco's in which celebrities, politicians, well-known people of all walk, shape, and size sign a hot dog bun. Burt Reynolds is there, former First Lady of the United States, Nancy Reagan's there, Jamie Farr is there, Mr. T is there, and on this date coming up March the 1st, during our live broadcast, the Vice President of Tony Paco's is going to preside as Mary Ellen Withrow signs a hot dog bun that will forever be enshrined on the walls of Tony Paco's, as well as our very own radio legend here on this station, Charlie Evers. So you're not going to want to miss that for love nor money. And coming up next week, we've got a whole lot of great guests coming up. I know next Wednesday we're going to have the amazing Kreskin on, who's a great friend of this program. He's got a new book out. So all kinds of stuff to talk about next week, all kinds of good programming, so stay tuned for that. Now this hour, going to be a very interesting hour, because certainly there is nobody, I don't think, on the face of God's green earth who does not know the name Bill Cosby and knows the story of what has happened to him in the past few years. Bill Cosby is currently in a prison in Pennsylvania, and one of the very few people who has seen him since he was incarcerated there last year is his friend and head of the PR firm representing Mr. Cosby, Andrew Wyatt. In recent days, Mr. Cosby has released some statements on some things going on, and I know Andrew has visited with him in the last few days. So we're going to talk about all these statements, everything going on with Mr. Cosby, and have a good time here with Andrew Wyatt. Andrew, how are you?
I am doing great, Scott, and thanks for having me on, and I want to also say good afternoon to your listeners as well.
Andrew, I want to start here. Before we get to the most recent statement released by Mr. Cosby, actually, before we get to the statement at all, when you send out these statements, because of the current situation with Mr. Cosby, are a lot of people covering them? Are you there, Andrew? Hello, Andrew? Are you there? We might have lost contact here with Andrew. I tell you what we're going to do. We are going to take a short break here and come back with Andrew as quick as we can. I think the call might have dropped there. Might have been on a cell phone. You know, we might wait a few minutes here and see if we can get Andrew back on the line. Again, we are chatting with Andrew Wyatt. He is the head of the PR firm currently representing Bill Cosby. And there are some statements here that have been released in the last couple weeks that we certainly want to delve into that have been released by Mr. Cosby through his PR firm. And we'll get back to that first question about what the coverage has been like, because I don't know. I don't know if people are covering these statements as they normally would. I think Andrew's coming back in here. Let's see what we can come up with. Andrew.
Scott.
Andrew?
Scott, Andrew.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, we got disconnected, so I called you from a landline.
Oh,
so well, perfect.
I appreciate that. Did you hear the question I had asked you?
I did not hear the question.
The question was, before we get into the two statements that have come out in the last 2 weeks, being Mr. Cosby's PR person at this point, when you release these statements, do you see them getting a lot of coverage, what he is saying?
Not necessarily. I think it's always been hard for us to get coverage. We have been ignored on so many platforms. When these alleged allegations surfaced in 2014, media refused to take or hear statements from us. So we had to start, we had to be a little strategic in getting statements out through local media, opposed to trying to go the national route. People mainly would come and say, well, we don't want a statement from him. We want to hear from him. We don't want to hear from his attorneys. We don't want to hear from a publicist. So they put a block against us. And so I appreciate shows like your show, who gets the information out to the masses, so that we, our side, can be heard and we can speak the truth. And we try to do those things. And it's, like I said, it's always hard to do, but we try.
Now, the first thing I want to do, the first statement I'm going to read, which comes from Mr. Cosby, there is going to be a reference in here to a Miss Coleman. Now, Andrew will fill us in on who Miss Coleman is if the general public doesn't know. But here's the statement as it came from Bill Cosby. The statement reads, I heard about Miss Coleman's NBC 10 interview from the residents here. Would be in the prison, the penitentiary that Mr. Cosby's currently in. Here is why I, Mr. Cosby, have no remorse and will never have remorse. I was given a deal. I settled out of court for $3.8 million. I waived my Fifth Amendment rights. I was declared not guilty in 2005 by the Commonwealth, never charged. However, a low-life defense attorney and a corrupt judge needed me guilty now, not for justice, but for their political aspirations. They say, Mr. Cosby, you must attend these classes. Why? One word, entrapment. My political beliefs, my actions of trying to humanize all races, genders, and religions landed me in this place surrounded by barbed wire fencing, a room made of steel and iron, so I now have a temporary residence that resembles the quarters of some of the greatest political prisoners, Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Randall Robinson, and Dr. Benjamin Chavez. I stand upright as a political prisoner, and I smile. The truth is strong. Bill Cosby. Now, Andrew, fill us in. What's the backstory here?
Well, this is an interview taped in Philadelphia roughly three, four weeks ago, with Aaron Coleman at NBC 10, Philadelphia. Aaron reached out to me back in January and said that she would like to sit down with me and talk about Mr. Cosby and update about how he's doing, how he's faring in prison, and what are the next steps. So this interview aired last week, if I'm correct, on Monday and Tuesday. It was a two-part interview, and a number of the residents, which Mr. Cosby calls inmates, residents, were going throughout the institution, and the officers and the two trustees that he come in contact with were giving him you know information about this interview, how well it went, their thoughts. And those type of things. So, and him and Mrs. Cosby talked about it over the phone. So Mr. Cosby decided to dictate something to Mrs. Cosby, and he called her on a Wednesday morning, if I'm correct, or Tuesday morning, and he gave her, a Wednesday night or Tuesday night, and he gave her this statement, and he said, get it to Andrew. And I want to explain to people why I have no remorse. And he has no remorse because he feels that he was targeted. And he was targeted by the district attorney, Kevin Steele, who said, if you elect me, I will go after Bill Cosby. It was an unethical campaign promise. Racially charged statements that were made during the jury selection process where Stu Ryan, the assistant prosecutor, made a racially charged statement in the courtroom hallway, and the defense team tried to raise Ryan's statement. destroyed her statement to Stu Ryan and a detective. Marital donations to protesters where the judge's wife worked with a women's organized against rape organization to help get Mr. Cosby's honorary degrees rescinded, and the judge refused to recuse himself. In 1998-99, Judge O'Neill ran against Bruce Castor, who was the DA that gave Cosby the deal, and he would never be convicted or charged with anything. Because the evidence is not here. You to a civil deposition, and he settled out of court with Constant. Well, the judge was having an affair with Castor's assistant district attorney at the time, and Castor exposed this, which cost the judge the election, and it was a publicized affair. So those are a number of issues that why he said that he has no remorse and he's innocent, because of the corruption with the judge and his district attorney. Now, the political prisoner part, Mr. Cosby, I met with him, and he said, you know, while I sit here, I'm channeling the great political prisoners who were friends of mine, Martin Luther King Jr., Nelson Mandela, Randall Robinson, I knew Gandhi. I sat with all of these guys, and they told me if I continue to try and humanize all races, genders, and religions, that I will be targeted. Now, Dr. Chavis was mentioned because Dr. Benjamin Chavis, as you know, who was part of the Wilmington 10, and there's a case law in North Carolina called Chavis versus North Carolina. Dr. Chavis, I took him to visit with Mr. Cosby in January of this year. He had two visits with Mr. Cosby. And he said to Mr. Cosby, we're fighting for you, and you are now a part of a great class of political prisoners. And so that's why Mr. Cosby dictated that statement to Mrs. Cosby.
It's interesting because I think a fair question is, and Mr. Cosby mentions it in the statement here, that he settled out of court for $3.8 million back in 2005. And kind of explain, because a lot of people feel that if you're not guilty, why pay that amount of money?
Well, Bruce Castor came to Mr. Cosby's attorneys and said, look, there's no case here. I can't move forward. Ms. Constant has given inconsistent statements to six law enforcement agencies, some agencies in Canada, in Toronto, Montgomery County, the district attorney's office, detectives. He said, so I cannot move forward with criminal charges. Nothing adds up here. The facts don't add up. What she's claiming, she can't prove, and she's given different accounts. So Castor, on the witness stand during the hearings, before the first trial ever happened, we had a number of hearings, and Castor sat on the witness stand, and he said, my goal was to make her wealthy. I knew she did not have a case against him. So I said I was sending this to the civil courts, and they decided at that time to opt out of going to court. Mr. Cosby, part of the deal was he would have to sit for a civil deposition and waive his Fifth Amendment rights, but nothing would come back to hunt him, and everything would go under seal. And that's what, and they signed a confidentiality agreement. And Mr. Cosby settled out with her for $3.8 million. And no charges were ever supposed to be brought. The case was done. DAs they're doing deals right now. It's not uncommon for a district attorney, when he or she doesn't have a case, to cut a deal. And that's the deal that was cut.
It's very interesting because I think there was a lot of conjecture when this case was unsealed from 2000 and 2005, when the deposition was unsealed, I guess is
correct.
What I should say. And that did seem to be a turning point in the case, because some of the, even though it wasn't supposed to be seen, which is aptly laid out here. Some of the things I think that Mr. Cosby did say during that deposition, I think certainly changed a lot of public opinion at that time.
Well, it's not what he said during the deposition. Keep in mind, Associated Press hired attorneys to unseal this deposition. Judge Robredo, who sealed the deposition back in 2005, he's a federal judge, he made a statement saying that Cosby is a moralist. And because of him being a moralist, I'm going to unseal this deposition. Now, the appellate court later ruled that Judge Robredo was out of line. He should have never unsealed that deposition. And he was wrong, but now you cannot put the toothpaste back in the tube. So it's out. But in that deposition, the media spent it where they only gave excerpts from the deposition. Where they asked Mr. Cosby about Quaaludes. They didn't talk about one of the accusers, Ms. Saragonese, who was deposed as well in the 70s, and said that, you know, I waited till he got off stage and I asked him, do you have Quaaludes? And we went, he had some, and he went in the car and we had sex. You know, they just gave you excerpts, but if you pull up the deposition, and we posted this on Mr. Cosby's social media page after Sharon Osbourne stated that Mr. Cosby admitted to raping and drugging women. We posted a copy of the deposition, case number 47612.013, Cosby versus Commonwealth, and page 135, line 1 through 6, have sex with. Answer, yes. Did you ever give any of these young women the Quaaludes without their knowledge? That's the question that you've been directed to answer. And he answers no. The media only gave excerpts to make it look as if he was guilty of these things and admitted to it when he did not admit to anything.
You know, Andrew, when I go and listen to people, because certainly there was no bigger case than this last year that I can think of, maybe in a long, long time. I think one of the juxtapositions here that has been the problem is that Life magazine in the 1980s, America's Father, when he did comedy, I remember when he came here to Ohio, I went and saw him. He didn't use a profane word on stage. He, Jell-O, the spokesperson for Jell-O, always with kids and having, you know, he had a very clean, probably the cleanest of anybody I can think of, image as far as a human being goes in the media. And he did go out and speak in the early 2000s, late 90s about things he felt was wrong in the African-American community. And I think when these stories started to come out, of extramarital affairs and Quaaludes, I think it was a tremendous juxtaposition of who the public thought they knew. I mean, does he agree and understand that? I mean, his private life's his private life.
We understand that, but Mr. Cosby, even in his deposition, was talking about the culture of the 70s, the 60s. As you know, Quaaludes didn't make you lethargic. If you do the research, they were not something that made you incapacitated, where you didn't know who you were or what you were. You were not zombified with Quaaludes. Basically, they were called disco biscuits, and they were used for partying. And those type of things. And Mr. Cosby talked about the culture. The affairs, if people go back and do the research, Mr. Cosby and Mrs. Cosby, they sat down in an interview with Oprah and talked about those things. And that's something that, you know, look, there's no law against infidelity. Yes, you know, morally wrong, but that was the culture. It happened. Mr. Cosby was one of the biggest stars in the world. It still is. However, that was a part of their culture. And I don't see how you can take a man having a number of affairs and turn it into, you know, rape. You know, I think the new word for rape today is regret. You know, I think a lot of these women had regrets because they didn't become famous. They didn't, he didn't make them a household name. They wanted more. And so you come back 30, 40 years and you make up these alleged allegations. And just because a woman say it happened doesn't mean that women don't lie. You know, it doesn't mean that women are always honest. You know, we're only seeing these type of allegations stick to African-American men. And you look at what Gloria Allred has done. You look at her career. She has spent most of her career going after black men who are successful against these type of allegations. No white men, only black men. You know, you never hear about her going after Harvey Weinstein when her daughter, Lisa Bloom, was representing Harvey Weinstein and wrote the press release to get him to admit to having sex with women in his hotel room and those type of things. But you never hear about that. It only sticks when it comes to a black man in America, whether you're wealthy or not wealthy. Now they have a formula that's tried, true, and tested against black men. You don't have to, you know, you just say it happened. You don't have to have any proof, any facts, no rape test done. It happened. Look at what's going on in Virginia with Justin Fairfax. You know, you could juxtapose all of these things and you get the same answer. It has to be true when it comes to black men in America.
The second statement that's been released, the more current statement, I think is even more profound and a much more interesting thing here when it comes to the country. Now, here's the statement, and then Andrew will fill us in, and he's even seen Mr. Cosby, I believe, this week.
And I just saw Mr. Cosby. That's why I was a little late calling into your show. I was coming back in the car from the prison, and I saw him, and he looks well, and I talked about doing your show, and he told me, he said, tell Scott I said hello. He said, I don't remember if we ever met, but tell him I said hello, and all I want is the facts and truth out, if it would be allowed, and that's the message he gave me about maybe an hour ago.
Well, and I send a message back to Mr. Cosby that I just ask questions, and there would be no deviation from that if we're ever able to make that happen.
We will consider that, and as I told you, we will consider that, and I've spoke to him about it, and I spoke to him about your show, and you know, look, we don't run away from questions. We just want to provide the public with the proper answers and the factual answers. And we're not asking for any special favors. We just want the truth out here. And it's a shame that trial wasn't carried, you know, out to the public, to the masses, of what was being said in that courtroom. Because I think we would have a different perspective out here when it comes to Mr. Cosby and who he is and what he has been accused of.
Well, you know, Andrew, I tend to agree with you on that. And not that the crime is parallel, but I do remember, and I think you do as well, Robert Blake was imprisoned for killing his wife, put on trial, and when Robert Blake was in prison, they felt that he was going to be found guilty at that time, and he went against his lawyer's advice and everybody's advice and did an interview from prison, and he was obviously found innocent, the end of that story, but he gave credit to the interview because he said people got to see and hear his story. And there is something right to that, I believe, in somebody's own words.
Right, I agree. I agree. It has to be, you know, I'm out here because of Mr. Cosby being incarcerated, so I'm his voice, I'm his mouthpiece. People say, well, yeah, you get paid to do it. Well, attorneys get paid to do certain things. Gloria Allred, it was, you know, every woman that got on that witness stand, the 404B witnesses, they said that she's my representative, she's my publicist. So, you know, just because you're getting paid, you know, I'm a very ethical person who has integrity. I'm not out here to allegations first surfaced in 2014, the fall, I called Mr. Cosby, and I asked him the question. I said, I just need to know, because of who I am and what I am and what I represent, are you guilty of these things? Because I just need to know. And he said to me, Andrew, I will not take you through, nor my family, the valley of shame. And that was all I needed.
Well, and I think that's the interesting part here, because I would guess that 99% of people listening to this interview, 99% of people who are familiar with this case, nobody wants to see an innocent person in prison.
Correct.
And I think that's why one of the things I do hear is we haven't heard from him. And I think there's a little mystery about that. And
only because, Scott, and not to interrupt you, is because we were advised, of course, by legal counsel for him not to say anything. Now, every time his attorneys put something out, a statement, defamation suits started flying. These women said it had nothing to do with the money. If you go back and look at one of the first CNN interviews where all the women sat down, Don Lemon asked the women, are you going to sue for defamation? Are you looking for money? They all said, no, we would never sue. We just want our truth out. But as soon as his attorney put out a statement saying these are fantastical stories that are a decade old, defamation suits started flying. They even filed a defamation suit against his attorney at the time. So, you know, Mr. Cosby could not say anything for that purpose, you know, because they were filing defamation suits and our attorneys were having to go into court defending themselves.
Oh, absolutely.
At that time.
Absolutely. And that's during a trial, I believe that is right. As we have talked, you know, no secrets, that I just think at this point, and honestly, I'm on radio, but the truth of the matter is radio doesn't show the confines, which is
right.
Sometimes a much, much better thing. It's people really pay attention to the words because that's what you have. And so it's an interesting medium, I think, for that reason. But
right.
So it certainly would be in his own words, and we hope mm-hmm. one day that's able to happen.
Well, I hope so, too. And like I said, he is considering that. Mr. Cosby, if you ever met him or those that who met him or come in contact with him, he loves to talk.
Yeah, well, that's I did meet him.
He loves to
yes.
talk.
I met him, and we had a very interesting conversation that was very polite. And, you know, I will say this, and the facts are the facts. When I did meet him, which was back in 2001, right after 9/11, mm-hmm. he seemed much more interested in me than I'm interested in him, but he wanted to ask me questions. So he was that type of a guy with the media in those days. So
and he still is. You know, even with the officers. He wants to know about them. He wants to know about their children. He wants to know about, you know, how things are going with their children and them. You know, he was telling me a story today. One of the residents said to him, my son hates me. And my son said he never wants to see me again. And he said, look, man, he said, that's not forever. He said, that's not forever. He said, the same way you worked to raise your son and get him out of the house so you can have some freedom, you got to work that same way to get him back, and he will be back.
And this is interesting. I want to get definitely, we've got 15 minutes left here. I want to get to the second statement because
okay,
I think it's
ahead.
An important part. This again is from Bill Cosby. This was released, I believe, earlier this week. Was it not, Andrew? Yeah. The statement goes as follows. I am grateful to the United States Supreme Court and to the federal courts of Massachusetts for upholding the law in this case. I thank each of the justices for their ruling, which gives me renewed hope that by fair and impartial courts in the country, we'll go on to deliver justice. This is the reason why I, Bill Cosby, have no remorse, because I am innocent and will continue to channel the strength of the great political prisoners. Finally, the truth is being allowed to be heard and read by the public. What is the backstory on the case so the audience will know?
Okay, well, the United States Supreme Court the justices, a case was filed with them by Kathleen McKee versus Bill Cosby. She accused Mr. Cosby of defamation when his attorneys wrote a statement stating that these fantastical stories. Well, her case was thrown out twice by the lower courts. So she, last year, when it was thrown out, she decided to go to the highest court, which was the United States Supreme Court. And that was filed in August of last year. We got a unanimous decision by all the justices, but Clarence Thomas wrote an opinion, and basically saying that she was not defamed by Mr. Cosby because she made herself a public figure. Mr. Cosby did not bring up any of these accusers' names, but he focused mainly on McKee, and he never brought her name up. She went out and did interviews. She went out and made herself a public figure. So Mr. Cosby, they dismissed the case unanimously, and so her case goes away completely. She went through, two or three lower courts, and they dismissed the case. So she took it to the Supreme Court, and they dismissed it. So that's why Mr. Cosby dictated that statement to Mrs. Cosby. And what we're realizing and seeing now, Scott, is interesting. You know, judges that are selected versus elected, they rule based on the law that we're noticing when it comes to Mr. Cosby. These judges that hold seats that are elected, they're so afraid to say that Mr. Cosby didn't defame anyone. They're so afraid to throw out the case. Even this case with Mr. Cosby, the criminal charges that he was convicted of, the statute of limitations had ran out. But the judges are so afraid because they're controlled by special interest groups, campaign donors. They're worried about their Q scores and how they're going to look in the public, and how public opinion is going to sway. And they're worrying about keeping those salaries and not getting elected again. So they go with the masses and what the public wants, what the lynch mob wants. And so this was just for us, this is a huge victory, we feel. And we hope that, you know, the appellate judges who are going to hear our appeal for Mr. Cosby to vindicate him will rule based on law, not based on the next election. Look at what these justices did unanimously. Mr. Cosby should not be where he is today. But as I stated, and as he states to me every day, before we leave, remember, Andrew, this is bigger than Bill Cosby. This is about every black and brown man in America, but just not black and brown, about every man in America, that you cannot make up stuff just because you want to make it up. And that's what that message, what was sent from the United States Supreme Court, happened today. And it was a beautiful message. It's a beautiful win.
One of the big stories that did get national attention involving Mr. Cosby in the last month was the fact that there was some conjecture on this, that he was put in general population. What is the true story of all that?
I received a call from Graham Bulley of the New York Times saying, Andrew, I received that he had gotten an email from Amy Warden, who is the spokesperson for SCI Phoenix Prison, stating that Mr. Cosby is now in general population. And he said, it was very strange because he said, you wouldn't have a PR person from a level 5 maximum security prison reaching out to a journalist to say where an inmate is housed. He said, so I found it very strange. I said, well, I just met with Mr. Cosby, Graham, and he's not in general population. He said, well, I will send you a copy of her email where she states he's in general population. I said, it's not true. He said, well, Andrew, she has also sent pictures of the area he's been housed in. And he said, look, I'm going to go with the story because she contacted the New York Times to break the story. I said, but it's not true. So basically, Mr. Cosby was told on December 7, 2018, that they were going to be moving him to a veterans facility on the campus of the institution, SCI Phoenix. And they call it a veterans facility because it's housed for it's housing for elderly inmates who have served in various branches of the military. And that's where Mr. Cosby is at now. He's not in general population. He has the same trustees that assist him, new officers, and sometimes the same officers. But he's not in the area because he's blind. And he said, Andrew, they would not put me in an area where I can't see someone coming at me. They're just not going to do that. So I feel that Ms. Warden was trying to garner media attention for herself, as I said in my statement that I released. Because why would you put anyone's life in jeopardy to say where they're housed? Someone might want to make a name for themselves and hurt Mr. Cosby. So why would you disclose that information? It didn't make any sense, and I don't know. And it's all about semantics. She was basically saying, well, by Andrew coming to visit him, that means that he's a part of general population. Well, I guess if you want to call a visit a part of general population, you can, but he's not in general population. He's in a veterans facility on the campus of that institution.
When you go to visit him, as you just did hours ago, how long do you get to spend with him, and what is the situation like?
Well, you walk in, you get a number, and you sign in, and you sign his inmate number in, and you go take a seat. Then my number today was number 7, so they call, one of the officers called number 7. They go into the computer system, log you in, you show them your driver's license, and you give them $10 for a key to a locker because you have to put your cell phone. You're not allowed to go in with anything into this particular locker. And you hold on to the key and your ID. You come through. Eventually, they call over. It takes a while for them to bring him from this part of the campus to where the visitations happens because he's blind, so they have to put him in a wheelchair. They can't take the chance of walking him over because it's snow and ice on the ground. So they get him over. It takes about 20 minutes to 30 minutes to get him over to the visitation area. And once he comes over, they let me know, and then they call me up. I go to metal detectors. They check me out. And then they said, nice visit. Have a nice visit. So I go through a steel door, one steel door. It closes. I hit a button, it buzzes, and it's another steel door that opens up. And then I go through that door, it closes, and then there's a third door. And an officer opens that door up, and there's a general sitting area with residents and their family members just sitting out in the open, playing with their children. And Mr. Cosby is sitting in a private room, and I walk through, and I go in that private room, and he stands up, shake my hand, and we sit and talk. Visitation starts at 8 a.m. to 3 p.m., and you can stay as long as you want once you're back there until visitation ends.
When it comes to Bill Cosby the person, one of the things, I think the first thing that comes to our mind is stand-up comedy. And he was doing that, fairly consistently right up until this whole situation started. Does he miss performing in front of groups?
Oh, he loves it. He definitely misses it. And he talks about it. He said, look, when I get out of here, I'm going back on stage. He said, when I get out of here, I will be going back on stage. Mr. Cosby is more than just to remind people, he's a cultural icon. And when I say he's 21st century civil rights leader, I mean that. Look, in May 14th, 1964, Mr. Cosby performed a benefit concert on behalf of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And the NAACP in 1965. He was the first black man to start a major television network dramatic series, I Spy, with Robert Culp. And they blocked that show in most states in the South because a black man, starring with a white man. In the show was the number one new dramatic show on television, and Mr. Cosby won 3 Emmy Awards for Best Actor in 65, 66, and 67. First black man to do that. In 1968, after the assassination of Dr. King, he was invited to the home of the king by the King family and attended the funeral. And he paid for the Poor People's March on Washington, D.C. that was attended by 50,000 people. In 1968, he narrated a television series called Black History, Lost, Strayed, or Stolen that was considered the first and most important documentary series on black history. So Mr. Cosby has done so much for black history, and let's not forget The Cosby Show, which held number one for 6 years in the 80s and changed the dynamics of how black families viewed themselves and black young black boys and girls wanted to go to Hillman that was on a different world. Let's talk about how The Cosby Show is credited for America having the first black president of the United States that they call the real Huxtable family, the Obamas. So he is a cultural icon. He's more than just a comedian. He's a guy who has used his celebrity, his comedy, his acting ability to humanize all races, all genders, and all religions. And he will be back on a stage. He will be vindicated through the appellate process.
In the last few minutes, Andrew, I think for every reason you just mentioned, it's interesting because he did know so many of the well-known civil rights activists, well-known television stars, and worked with so many great people over the years, and a lot of those people are still with us, certainly a lot of people from The mm-hmm. Cosby Show and so on and so forth. Has anybody reached out to him since this situation?
Oh, they all reach out.
They all
reach out. They all call from, you name it, Sinbad, to you name big actors, political figures, Congresswoman Maxine Waters. They all call to check on him. Randall Robinson sends an email to our California office every week checking on Mr. Cosby that gets to Mrs. Cosby. They all call, all the celebrities, like I said, all his friends, they call, and they say it's not right. And they always remind us, they said, keep in mind, in 1973, during the Watergate hearings, you know, Mr. Cosby was on Richard Nixon's enemies list. And he was watched by the FBI for 4 years. They watched him, a lot of his shows were canceled because he was labeled a communist. So he's not new to this type of corruption, this egregious behavior. And you know, they always say that to us because they tell us that if he was on Nixon's enemies list and being watched for 4 years, how was he drugging and raping white women? Something to think about.
You know, it's interesting, Andrew, that you bring this up. There's a famous bit of footage, I think from the early 2000s, where Bill Cosby was on the Today Show right after Donald Trump was on the Today Show.
And there correct. I remember that.
Yeah, there was a little, and Mr. Cosby gave a few remarks about that at the time. People can find that and watch that if they want. What does Mr. Cosby think about what's going on with the president at this time? Does he have any opinion? Does he talk about it?
Oh, all the time. He said that, he said, mark my words, he said, they're going to come and get him in the middle of the night and put him in a straitjacket and walk him across the front lawn. And says it all the time. He said, this guy, he said, this guy is unbelievable how he's running this country. And he said, the racial tension that we see in America, he is heightening it. And he said, I can't wait to get out because they don't want me on the campaign trail. They don't want me out here stumping for these citizens, these American citizens out here against what Trump is putting out, against what he's doing. And he said, look, I commend Mueller, and I wish I had Mueller and the FBI to come and investigate Judge O'Neill and Kevin Steele. He said, because the people need the truth, and that's what they're doing. doing, providing the truth to the people.
Andrew, before we part ways, just on this note, is there anybody, with everybody announcing they're running for president, is there anybody he likes that he's mentioned on the Democratic side, obviously, at this point?
He loves talking about Joe Biden, and he loves talking about Bernie Sanders.
Interesting. Well,
he loves talking about those guys. He knew Joe Biden very well. They had a close relationship. He knew Senator Booker as well. They had a pretty good relationship. But everybody felt that, and including Mr. Cosby, that Bernie Sanders was robbed of the election, and he should have been the president. But we have what we have now.
And we will see what happens with reports coming around. Well, Andrew, like I always say, I cannot thank you enough for coming on, because I think reading these statements is one thing, but I think going into a little more in-depth is much more interesting. And as I've said, through emails and on the air, I do hope Mr. Cosby does the interview, because not only to talk about the obvious, but just things like we just learned about the president and things of that nature, in his own words, I think would be very powerful at this point in time. It's an interesting story, if nothing else, I would say.
Well Scott, as I've said to you, and I do try to keep my word, because that's all that I have, is my word and my last name. We are considering your show. That has not been ruled out. Mr. Cosby wants to talk. And maybe one day he would get that opportunity. Look, we before doing after the first trial, we did, I think, Smirconish's show, and he went on. So he's not fearful about going on anyone's show, and he wants to be asked tough questions, and he wants to give the answers, and he wants to be heard. So I thank you for the opportunity, and we will keep that offer in mind. Hey, as long as you have a microphone and two chairs. We'll definitely always keep that in mind.
Well, I thank you. Andrew Wyeth, the PR representative and friend of Bill Cosby. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Scott. Have a great day, sir.
Interesting show.
10 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Interesting stuff to talk about. We're done for this day. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Stay tuned. More interesting programming right around the corner.
Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.
This is Patty Wooster with Marion Midget Football, a staple of unity for 45 years, providing sportsmanship, friendship,